Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive, and who are these guys here in the studio today? That's what they said as Dan and I walked in. Dan was here last Monday. It's been the Friday before that since I was here.
And I called in on Friday.
Oh, yeah?
with Ferg and Coach Don Dunn.
So I asked Ferg how Friday went today. I saw him over at Stephen Pearl's press conference. And Brian said things went fine for him as well, and I'm sure they did. As a matter of fact, I saw some people posting what a good job Jason did. So sounds like the week went pretty well with us not here.
Yeah, big shout-out before we get into our adventures. Big shout-out to everybody who contributed to keeping the show on the air last week
when
we were both out of town. So, that's Drew at the controls, who's not in today, but – I guess he's earned a day off
after five straight days.
Yeah,
that's tough.
I joked on Friday that's Drew's first 5-day week since like 2019. So it's good. Yeah,
probably close.
I was half joking. Thanks to Drew for showing up every day last week and doing a great job. And how about Coach Don Dunn?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I mean, just already
every day Don Dunn. I like it, man.
I mean, one of our favorites. Just bringing the energy and being just fantastic work by the coach last week, and we really appreciate that he was willing to devote so much of his time to keeping the drive working, and then everybody who filled in right with Coach all week
absolutely.
Long. The whole cast of characters. Right, that we had in the hosting role last week. Thank you to all of those guys for stepping up.
Absolutely, and pretty busy week.
Except Ferguson.
It was a pretty busy week last week. I mean, I did opt for the for an internet package.
Okay,
I couldn't stream anything. I could only, I could check the web. Basically, is what I could do. And it was
so brief people again. Where were you specifically? Like, what's the short version of what you did?
We went from Fort Lauderdale to Nassau to Key West to
Kokomo. Right?
To another island in the Bahamas, Half Moon Key.
Okay,
was the last spot stop before we were back to Fort Lauderdale. So
how was the weather?
Oh, it was great. We had some. There was some rain on Thursday that messed with a couple of the shows outside on the back of the ship where the pool they set up a stage and dance floor and viewing area and everything where the pool is at the back of the ship. That's really cool, but bad weather can affect it. And it wasn't so much the rain; it rained some. But there were 40-mile-an-hour winds.
Ooh.
And I would say liability probably had a lot to do with that. You know, you don't want your customers or the talent, being blown overboard.
Yeah, you want everyone coming back who got on the boat.
That's the idea.
One of the more important rules.
So I mean, they were able to move some things around. I think they made up most of the if not all of the shows. But it was great. I mean, it's great. The weather, other than that that brief little time, and that was while we were on the way to the last stop there in the Bahamas. I mean, it was in the 80s just about every day. I think the coldest weather we had may have been 55 or something one night. But it was generally in the 60s to upper, low 70s at night, and then the 80s during the day, just gorgeous. So great weather, ton of great food, and just the entertainment, the talent. It's just amazing when you're able to see multiple bands, some of whom you've known about for a long time, others who you might not be familiar with at all, and just realize how talented some of these musicians are. And that one of the things that they did that I thought was really cool this time. Now, this was a cruise. this particular cruise was started 30 years ago. This was the 30th edition of the Sandy Beaches cruise. And this one was started by Delbert McClinton 30 years ago. Now, Delbert's not doing as well. He's not performing anymore. We were there a couple of years ago when he did. But, I mean, there are a couple of acts that have been around for a long time. One that had sort of become one of the headliners over the last decade or so was the Mavericks. And, I mean, we're big fans of the Mavericks, but Raul Malo, their lead singer, passed.
Right. That was recent, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, in December. And, you know, the staterooms and everything were up for sale, and the list of artists, I mean, they were the headlining artist, and obviously they couldn't go, but their sax player and their musical director is their sax player, Max Abrams. He did some really cool things. He had some one-on-one interviews with different artists and things on the ship that you could either attend or you could watch. I mean, I can download them now. We can play them. But I mean,
oh, that's cool.
But you find out some of the background, and I knew some of the background. Some of these, as a matter of fact, I thought from you know, being a DJ and a music fan for years, that I knew a lot about some of these guys. But I had no idea some of the influences or some of the contacts or how things got started with some of the bands. I mean, from Jimmy Hall and Wet Willie to Randall Bramlett and Sea Level to Little Feet. I mean, it's just to hear some of the origins and some of the ways where they got to where they became big names and where they are now.
Had you seen Lyle Lovett before?
Oh, yeah. Is he, okay. We'd seen Lyle a couple of times.
And I hear he's great live.
He's a great storyteller with his music and while he is performing music between songs.
He seems like a booking that would make sense for the Googe.
Absolutely.
Right? Like
that would be a fabulous one.
Yeah. I would,
because he can, you know, this.
We have fans over there.
This was not his large band because, I mean, Lyle has a huge band that's with him. This was him acoustic with like four other guys. They could definitely do anything, and he did, you know, just about any of his stuff. So no, it was a blast. Had a great time. Got back in last night, and on the way in, yeah, was surprised to still see some white stuff on the side of the road just south of Columbus.
Right. I missed most of the weather. I was in Monroe and then San Marcos for what's probably going to be the last time too. Texas State's leaving the conference,
mm-hmm.
So it's unlikely that, you know, the next time that at least we're traveling with Troy, then the next time I'm going to make that trip. But no, I had a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of bus time and you know, some time at the airport on Saturday. But two great games, you know, close. The energy of like road conference games is always a lot of fun. You know,
right.
You get, you know, that. I don't think things are just ratcheted up a little bit. Auburn will get a taste of that. Auburn's men will get a taste of that over the next couple of weeks. You know, that you know, the thought of being that.
It's a road week for, yeah, Auburn men's basketball.
And embracing that sort of, you know, that villain role a little bit, you know, when you go and face down a hostile atmosphere. It's just, it's a blast. And Troy comes away one of only two teams left in the Sun Belt with one conference loss.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's Troy and Arkansas State at the top of the league. And, yeah, some home games this week and then a trip to West Virginia next week. Could be some winter weather in store for me.
I would think that there might be.
Yeah, West Virginia and then a drive down to Myrtle Beach next week. So the battle continues. But having fun with a really good team and a really good season. As for Auburn's men, did you get to see?
Didn't get to see any. Like I said, I had the internet package where I could check scores, yeah, and I could sort of follow along on the live stats. They weren't fast, and they paused, but so I could see what was happening sort of as things went along, but I didn't get to watch any of it. I haven't seen any highlights.
I can get you up to speed. Okay, so you can get up to speed on the Auburn football transfer portal stuff. I mean,
I'm telling you what, that's about as tough. There was a busy week last week. All right, Brian, and folks may be wondering, well, it's Monday. Have you left everything screwed up like last week? It's like, no, we should be back on schedule. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is going to be joining us. But Auburn baseball
he's got more
him to talk to Butch
yeah.
Thompson after baseball practice today, and he said he'll be here as soon as he gets done with that.
He seems to have more important things to do right now, which is understandable with a very hotly anticipated Auburn baseball season coming up. Mm-hmm. So talking to Butch and
multiple. I've seen multiple sites now having Auburn preseason top 10,
and we will talk to Brian about that baseball season coming up as we get closer and closer to the start too. But mm-hmm. but also, yeah, men's basketball, a close competitive win against South Carolina. A couple of things that really stand out from that game. I think first of all, breakthrough performance.
Oh, Philip Jovich.
From Phil. Jovich. You know, yeah, that's right.
I thought I'd get it right, and then it's like, I mean, look, Andy calls him and we checked and you checked the pronunciation that Auburn has. Andy's not going to get his own players' names pronunciation incorrect. So,
although I will say, like, sometimes, you know, it pronunciations, especially with players from Eastern Europe, where the syllables can be.
I would expect
be lost
Andy
in translation.
Asked him sure. how it's pronounced,
and it's yeah, and Jovich is Jovich. The you know is sort of the yeah it's the accepted pronunciation of Phil's name.
The game of his Auburn career.
Fantastic. Yeah. Attacking the rim and just being a problem that South Carolina could not solve. And that's really exciting for a freshman who's had a huge learning curve over the last few months to be able to play like that and deliver in a game where Auburn needed him to step up because Keyshawn Hall got in foul trouble early and Auburn needed somebody.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't play, what did he play, 14, 15 minutes or something was all he was able to play. Yeah, I feel good that before I left, I asked a question about Philip, of Steven, and he really raved about, you know, how he has improved and how hard he works and what he is becoming. And I think they really are excited about the potential now for the youngster. I mean, he's 20, but I mean, he's still a freshman.
Oh, for sure. And there's a ton of, there's a ton of excitement around the game he just played. Mm-hmm. Tahad's shooting woes continue,
yeah.
but you know what? I think unlike against Missouri, when Tahad let those shooting woes bleed into other aspects of his game, and even Steven was talking about it afterwards where Tahad wasn't running in transition or making the best decisions about when to shoot.
Defending. Yes.
Like when his shooting woes are bleeding into those aspects of his game, it can be really tough because right now, Auburn.
He's your point. I mean, that's.
Not just that.
I mean, there's really no other option right now.
You need all the minutes you can get out of Tahad, and you want to be able to maximize those minutes with and you'd love for the shots to go in, but it's not just about that, and I think he's shown that the shots could go in, but I think he did a better job of doing a lot of the other stuff right against South Carolina as opposed to, like, I thought there were multiple. I wish there was a stat for the point guard made the right pass and it would have been an assist if not for a missed shot.
Well, Stephen Pearl mentioned just that today when he was talking. He had a couple of things really, very, really complimentary of Tahad. One, he said Tahad had 28 defensive miscues against Missouri,
and considerably fewer against
eight against South Carolina. To play a game and have 20 fewer mistakes defensively, but then he said, easily a dozen assists with the passes that he made and the looks that Auburn had. And again, I didn't get to see any of it. I just saw the shooting numbers and was thinking, ooh, that's a rough night. Auburn 2 of 19 from 3. But Stephen.
And no, today, and it is a rough. It is a rough night.
He felt 14 of those 19 were good looks.
Yes.
And he again explained what he considers not a good shot. It's not just are you open, and are you a guy that can make shots.
It's where the rebounders are.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. He said. You know, on Phillips three. The three and the four were out on the wings.
That was a heat check.
The three and the four were out on the wings. They got nobody that's got a chance of getting the rebound.
That's a guy who feels like, not to mention the fact that Phillip himself is one of the better rebounders, right?
So yes, you're not crazy.
You're not crazy about him shooting threes because he's out there.
Well, Stephen said that's something that they feel is going to come, that he can make that shot. But you've got to know when to take that shot.
I know people feel really good about like his baseline jumper game, which you haven't seen a ton of, but they know that like he's got the ability to step out a little bit. They think the three-pointer will come, but I mean, yeah, he was playing above the rim for doing his damage that way against South Carolina, but you're right, the three-point shot it's something that I think could become a crisis if these percentages were to become the norm.
Oh yeah.
But at the moment I would still say that on any given night, Auburn's got several guys that you think open, in rhythm, from their spot are going to be a threat in the three-point game. So that's why I wouldn't panic too much about that. It is something to watch. But for the most part, like Tahad, yeah, you'd like for more of the shots to go in. But he did a lot of the stuff that he needs to do separate from his field goal percentage. He did a lot of that stuff right. But Bill, no, the Jovic and Sebastian Williams Adams combination, like the thought that you maybe have the start of something with those two forwards as true freshmen in an era where, look, I get it.
Like, right. There are no guarantees that you're going to have those players, you know, in the future.
They could play together for a long time here. They could play together for a long time somewhere else.
Yeah, like they could play at different places.
But
they've got a chance of being really good players for a few years.
And that's
got
to be really exciting,
yes.
I think, for a coach in year one and for a program that, you know, I know that every year is about this year in college basketball, and you don't know who's going to be back next year. But the last couple of years for Auburn, it was pretty overtly all or nothing that season, right? You thought going into the season that ends with the loss to Yale, like that felt like a team that could win, an opportunity to win the national championship, and you didn't know who was coming back. It turns out you bring back practically the entire team.
You brought back a lot more than you thought you would.
But you knew most of those guys were done with college basketball at the end of that season, which is why last year the stakes felt so high all season long. This year, it's a little bit different. I mean, yes, you have guys that are playing their last year of college basketball, and yes, you don't know who.
You only had a couple though that are playing.
Only a couple, and you don't know who's back next year because of the rules. But the thought that this is the start of something with Sway, with Phil, the fact that Tahad has multiple years of eligibility remaining if he wants to utilize them.
Oh, like, Elijah Freeman has multiple years of eligibility.
Like, I mean, one of the things that made the Auburn teams, like Jani Broome's teams got better the longer his career went at Auburn because those guys got more and more comfortable playing together, right? And the thought that you could have a couple of guys that get comfortable playing together for a long time. And you're seeing it. I mean, not to mention that when you're talking about Freeman and Phil and Sway, this is year one of their college basketball career.
Right.
They could get a lot better between now and Valentine's Day.
Oh, like, yeah. The thing is, you're talking about Phillip. I mean, look how much better he's gotten since the beginning of the season. And, you know, you feel like he's going to continue to improve, and so is Sebastian.
When I hear you say Phillip, I still think of Marshall. I still think you're talking about something you heard at the press conference or something from Phillip. But no,
I don't know how much room he has for improvement.
And I don't know how often he plays above the rim these days, like Filip Jovic. But it was the rim
of his coffee cup.
We love Phillip Marshall. But it was really exciting to see that, and Auburn's got a you got to tape up your fists, right, and get ready for several battles this week. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss wants you bad, and then I'll tell you what, you'd love to pick up the momentum of back-to-back wins and feeling like your front court's a little bit battle-tested when you face Florida on Saturday, because it's a
I thought I saw a reflection of like something blowing in the wind out there. It was Brian Matthews trying to get in,
so. and luckily I was able to disarm the
You did that without even looking.
I'm glad
you texted me, Brian. I thought I saw a shadow there, but then it's tough to keep looking out there. So yeah, anyway, but I think there are definitely some positives to take. I mean, Auburn's not going to shoot the ball. You wouldn't think as poorly, but to win a ball game, when you struggle shooting it, like Auburn did the other night, I think is a really good sign, because that has not been how Auburn has been able to win. When Auburn's won, it's because they've scored a lot of points and had to score a lot of points.
Yeah, I want to see how this team fares with the road tests going on this week, and if they can take one or more of these conference road games, because it would be huge for a young team still learning how to
they need to make up for the home loss.
That's
they've
right.
got an opportunity here now this week.
Big opportunity for these guys.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. Wow, it's like a normal Monday. Here on The Drive. Love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. That's The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
02 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, joined by Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. B-Man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. We had basketball interviews today, and then I went out and watched the baseball team do an inter-squad, their third one, I think, a preseason. Still getting into it. You know, normally this would be, what do they call them, forum ones back in the day.
You wouldn't have full team practice yet normally.
So they're about a week ahead.
It's good that they're able to get out there and do that.
So, and other than that, doing great.
Yeah,
glad to be here.
And Dan and I, again, wanted to thank you for helping out last week while we were gone.
Yeah. Me and Coach had a good time.
Well, that's great.
And we had a bunch of calls, too, which was awesome.
And that is really good.
Yeah, really appreciate everybody who called in last week, too, for chatting with our guest host. But, yeah, again, they appreciate the service of everyone who stepped up to put the show on the air last week. And, Brian, we're really glad you're here for a long list of reasons, because we love talking to you, because the Monday Musings are so much fun, because of all of your opinions about different things. But I think especially helpful because – we've been so busy and I just did a podcast with Justin where we were talking about a lot of the incoming transfers.
Right.
We went player by player.
Unbelievable, man. Yes. I mean, it's like when we left, Kathy and I left last Saturday to head to Fort Lauderdale.
Had we gotten the
and
Baylor?
I'm not
had
sure.
Had the Baylor running back signed
no.
yet by the time you?
No.
Wow.
Think
that's,
about
no,
that.
I mean, that's half
it's
the
like,
team.
No kidding. I think Auburn was, they were, it was under 20.
Right.
When we left. Is it 33 now? Something like
I
that.
I think that's correct. I think it's 33
incoming transfers.
Because Bryson Washington feels like pretty old news as far as Auburn's incoming transfers.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
right? When you remember you remember previewing the Auburn Baylor game at the beginning of the season, and that was one of the main threats for Auburn to stop, right? And the thought that in year one of a rebuild, when you expected a lot of the upperclassmen talent to maybe leave because of the shakeup, running back is a position where I think it's pretty astonishing what they've been able to do the retention of Jeremiah Cobb and bringing it. And that's before you get into Davenport from USF. That's before you get into the fact that they've seemingly held on to Omar and
go in the portal.
Exactly. So two very highly touted running backs from last year, Mabson and Henderson, are both in the fold, but Jeremiah and Bryson is a very solid 1-2 punch at running back for a team that probably wants to be able to run the ball to take some of the pressure off of Byron Brown.
Oh, absolutely. And you just look at what they've done. They've added 7 offensive linemen, 6 of them seniors. Mm-hmm. They brought in a bunch of tight ends. They added the 2 running backs, as you mentioned. They got Byron Brown, who's a dual-threat quarterback. They're going to run the ball and be a physical offense, I feel like.
No question, that's the plan.
Yeah.
It feels like getting offensive linemen in the portal is, I guess it's a dice roll everywhere. But, right, like we've seen Auburn shop at the top of the market in previous years for tackles, and you hope for the best, and the results have been uneven. Right, like I think it was uneven
last year and was really uneven the year before.
Well, because they're the names you could list, right? I mean, it's like Gunnar Britton, Dylan Wade, Percy Lewis, the Xavier
X,
Mason, Chaplin. Right? I mean, you got it's up and down production, but you hope for the best, and you know, it's I think you have to trust the evaluators. It seems like you went into the portal really hoping Auburn could get 2 guys that profile as clear-cut starters at tackle.
Yeah.
And I think between the guy at Michigan coming from Michigan State, Stanton. Yeah.
They got 4 guys that could legitimately be tackles. Mm-hmm.
And then Joe Simmons, right? From JMU. I think it seems like you've got 2 guys. And by the way, Joe Simmons, you're tempted to just say, well, you know, you lost a Simmons, and you gained a Simmons, and maybe you can
hopefully he can be as good as Kendall Simmons.
Well, maybe you can save some money by giving him some of Malcolm's old stuff. But yeah. I think that it's probably not going to fit. Joe Simmons would be my expectation there, because that's a big fella coming in.
But they also had Lear from
Stanford.
Jacob Strand from Oregon.
Yep.
State?
Oregon State.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, so I mean, you've got
all 4 of those
other
guys could play tackle.
Yeah, you've got some other tackle types. So you have options there at tackle, which
I think Cole Bess, I don't know if he had committed by the time you left. But
maybe.
I just think getting a center that's got starting experience in this offense, that's a leader from what we've heard, I think that's just a great addition there.
I like both of the Coles from USF. I think those could be. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Ellis wins the center job, the Coles could be your starting guards. I mean, those are 2 guys that, I mean, come in with starting experience from USF, familiarity in the system. Mm-hmm.
I think it's more likely that Cole, because of his experience, is going to be your center, and then maybe Cale competes at guard.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
No, I think they're both on the table, right? But I mean, because it feels like there are spots on the team, and Jack Lehrer throws this off a little bit, because now he comes in as a guy who seemingly can compete at several spots on the O-line too. But feels like you have a couple of spots where you're tempted to say, oh, this is a clear cut. Like, this guy's coming in, and it feels like a clear-cut starter. Byron Brown feels like a clear-cut starter. I was thinking that the Michigan State tackle and the JMU tackle felt like pretty clear-cut starters coming in, but you've got some
good to have more options.
That's right. I mean, I still would say that they seem like your starters at tackle, but they're bringing in some competition there. Is there anyone of the incoming transfers on defense? Is there anyone that stands out to you as, oh, he seems like he's coming in as a clear-cut starter for Auburn? Because the one that
– I don't know about clear-cut.
Michigan.
Ole
Miss would be the pass rusher.
Actually, my number one would be the cornerback from UCLA, Anthony Jordan.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Jordan Jr.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think Auburn lost both starting cornerback – Andre Jordan, excuse me.
Right.
And they needed, at least one starter, maybe 2. We'll see what Rashawn Pleasant can do, you know, competing for that. But they've already signed, is it 4 cornerbacks now?
I think it's at least 4.
Yeah, they got Scrap Richardson from Notre Dame, who has 4 years of eligibility.
Kid today.
Hard not to root
Kamari
for
Todd. Yep.
I mean, when you're talking Scrap Richardson, right? Hard not to find yourself rooting for.
I know. It's a great nickname.
I mean, and Auburn, at a place like Auburn too, that's had. You know, some
Arnaud
of those.
was an Auburn commit.
Yep. Another one from FSU. So
maybe 5.
Yeah. Because they got Gavin Jenkins from USF too. So that room has been strengthened, I feel like. Even though you lost 2 starters, mm-hmm. SEC experience, quality starters, I think they could be at least as good, maybe better.
Yeah. I mean, I would think you're talking Womack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think
Cody Sigler is another guy.
I think Walt Mathis has got a chance to play a lot as well.
Yeah. Yeah. He played every game for LSU last year, not as a starter, but as a rotational guy. I think he is a three technique like Cody Sigler. That's why I kind of pegged Sigler, but we'll see. I think it's Buddy Mathis is his nickname. Yeah, I don't know if we'll go by Walter or Buddy, but I think he is a guy that if he's not starting, he's playing a lot and certainly has that upside of a future starter for sure.
Well, a lot of these, especially when you're talking about someone with multiple years of eligibility remaining or someone who didn't really play 1 year and now is back in the portal, I describe them as lottery tickets. Right, like because they're relatively low risk additions. If it doesn't work out, they're back in the portal next year. But you know what? That was Xavier Atkins a year ago. Like Xavier Atkins.
That's right. Little used, seldom used. Didn't see that much action at LSU.
Yeah,
came in and was one of the best linebackers in the country.
And every single one of Auburn's additions from the portal doesn't have to be Xavier Atkins. But what if they hit on a couple of these guys like that? What if that's Scrap Richardson, right? Like, what if that's Buddy Mathis? I think there are some. Yeah, there are some really interesting. We didn't really talk about the receivers, but like they've got they've added an arsenal of
four of the top five USF receivers. Yeah. They've been looking for another guy.
Yeah, they've been
coming
trying
probably
to get
second
one more.
On three or four guys, and they're not done with that yet. We'll see how that develops.
Feels like they're gonna keep and I keep saying I like the potential of some of the guys they retained. Right, I mean, felt like we were talking about Bryce Kane a lot during the season as a guy who would be ready if his number was called.
Well, he's going to have his chance.
Yeah, so it's a no. It's been a, I guess appropriate with the weather. Right, it's been a flurry of activity.
There you go
for Auburn and for Alex Golish and he seems to be. Yeah, I mean, in the few public appearances he makes, I don't know if you know this, Bill, but his son was the celebrity letter.
Yeah, I heard somebody talking about that.
And they're, I guess with a lot of juniors in attendance and a lot, I mean, and the folks went crazy for it on Saturday. So it's, it sounds like Golish is up for the task of trying to assemble this roster and bring in as many guys as he can.
I don't think anybody's going to be accusing him of not working hard. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. We're a little behind. Love for you to join in. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday Drive, 334-321-1390.
We'll talk about it a little bit more, but there's some, I mean, just a crazy weekend of NFL action.
And there's a national championship.
There's
a national championship game. But the reason I bring the NFL up, not just because the games were amazing, but some Auburn headlines.
Yeah, good/bad.
Yeah. I mean, you hate it for Bo, but like whenever Bo faced any adversity, and I think he would tell you he's gonna be fine.
Oh yeah,
like he's like just wait.
I'm not terribly concerned about him long term. It's just it really sucks when you've got an opportunity and you're about to play for an AFC championship.
And what a massive game!
What an opportunity
for Jarrett Stidham, our old pal Jarrett Stidham, starting the AFC.
We'll talk that and more again. Yeah, come on in and join us.
He could Tom Brady the Patriots.
Yeah.
Email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews here in the studio. Let's get to the Drive hotline. Who have we got, Dan?
Terry.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Bill, Dan, welcome back. How y'all doing?
Yeah, we're doing fine. Good to be back.
Guys, I think Indiana is going to humiliate Miami tonight.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Yep.
They've humbled everybody in the playoffs. Charlie Trotman just went on and on the Max Roundtable about Alabama was going to give Indiana a game. They didn't give out the Indiana game.
Not at all.
It was a scrimmage.
And I really, Terry, and I went into the playoff thinking that maybe some of the more conventional superpowers would be able to topple Indiana. I thought
they would fold a little bit at some point. Under the pressure of being there, since they had never been there.
No, this team has been dominating.
No,
we were just talking about the team from a couple of years ago when Georgia destroyed TCU in the national championship game, and just the way they cruised through, they cruised through that game. That's what tonight feels like it could be if Miami isn't up to the task early. Now, if you get a closer game and Indiana has played some close games this year. It's not like they've destroyed everyone.
Right. No,
so,
that's right.
I mean, maybe Miami has the ability to throw some haymakers themselves, but it does feel like this is a – like if it goes as expected tonight, it feels like you're talking about – as crazy as this sounds, Terry, if you had said this a couple of years ago, I'd have said, Terry, it's the craziest thing to ever come out of your mouth. If you'd said, hey, Indiana, 2025 Indiana – is not just going to win the national championship in football at Indiana. You're going to be talking about them as one of the best teams you've seen in the last 25 years, like one of the best teams of the 2000s. They're like the Miami teams with Larry Coker or the Pete Carroll USC Trojans or Nick Saban's best teams at Alabama, 2019
90s
Nebraska teams. Sure, 2019 LSU. Like, I mean, you're talking about Indiana like that. It's just it's as incredible, and all those other teams we just listed had traditions of success in football.
Oh yes,
that predate those coaches, right? It's not like it would be like if Nick Saban did what he did at Kentucky. It would be like if he'd shown up somewhere that did not win in football.
Vandy, sure.
I think Kentucky's all because of the basketball comp. Like it's a little bit like, but it's that kind of thing where it's astonishing.
They're hungry, and the hunger just seems to get more intense by the game.
And Terry, I was just talking during the commercial break, remembering when Mendoza came to Auburn with Cal, 2024 Cal at Auburn week two. And you went into that game, not just you, Terry, but in general, folks went into that game thinking Auburn had the advantage at quarterback because Thorne had played a lot more and Thorne had had the 10-win season at Michigan State and Mendoza was making like his second career start. I forget if he started some in 23 for Cal, but it was clear, like whatever you want to call it, like moxie or magic or the it fact, like that thing quarterbacks have to have. The best quarterbacks have the thing that made Brady really special when he took over for Bledsoe and you know led the Patriots to the championship really early on, like that thing. Mendoza had it that day. He was making.
I remember telling people, I said, I don't know what it is, but that guy has it.
Yes,
yeah,
he had it
right.
That day. It was apparent. It was overflowing that day, and he's had it all season long. And it does. It's a fool's errand to seemingly predict which quarterbacks are going to be able to make the jump from college to the NFL and do well. But I would be pretty psyched if my NFL team got into the Fernando Mendoza business.
Well, I mean, Alabama is going to test them, and then Oregon is going to test them. They just humiliated. They've humbled them.
And they're
going to humble Miami tonight. I could see it. I could see Miami even leading at halftime, maybe a close game in the first half, maybe leading at halftime. But I think Indiana is going to win by 2 touchdowns or more.
Yeah, I think it could be even more. The thing that Indiana does so good is they're so disciplined. They don't make mistakes. And you
right.
look at Miami, and they probably should have won that semifinal game by 3 touchdowns or more. But the penalties, all the crazy stuff they do, it just caused that game to be much closer than it should have been. So I just think Indiana will capitalize on all those mistakes and win going away.
See, I have this weird feeling, Terry, that you're either going to get – I think we're going to get one of the two extremes. I think this is either a game where it's a 1-touchdown game going into the fourth quarter, and maybe even you get some magic, in the final 2 minutes. And we've had several playoff games like that, including Miami's win over Ole Miss, right? Like maybe the craziest, one of the craziest fourth quarters you'll ever see in a college football game.
Yeah.
I think we're either getting that or we're getting a game where it's pretty clear from the first snap that Indiana's better.
And you don't know what Carson Beck's going to do.
No,
this is this guy's 7th year, and you still don't know what he's going to do.
Sure, but he has
it's only he's, six.
That, he's that found and he's but he's found a way to he's found a way to make it work in the college football playoff.
He sure has.
So
yeah,
far,
he,
when they,
he goes after and throws 3 interceptions, Indiana win by 3 touchdowns.
I would think that it's either a game where it's Indiana by double digits and the lead grows big. I don't think it's like Georgia TCU, but that wouldn't tell you what get up 21 in the first quarter. And it could feel like Georgia TCU from a couple of years ago where the players are joking around, with the cameras because the game's so clearly over. It could be that, but absolutely. Would it be if it's a 1-score game in the fourth quarter and Carson Beck's been able to make good decisions and Miami's been able to put up resistance. Crazy to think, Keyonte Scott, another guy who was there when
MVP
Mendoza,
their first playoff
when
game.
Mendoza came to Auburn in 2024, starting for Auburn in the secondary that day, and now he's he's at Miami and he gets another shot. Mendoza, I get the sense Indiana's the better team.
It's funny you talk about how Auburn has a player on every NFL team in the semi, the finals of each conference championships. Are we going to start compiling that when it's like the national championship in college football?
Yeah,
I mean, you got Keyonte, but I don't think there's any Auburn players on Indiana that I know of.
There are thousands of players that are going to the portal.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I think the national title game of tonight will resemble some of those Super Bowls we've seen where people were getting beat 55-13.
Oh, the 49ers, the Redskins
the
49ers that year.
And the Bills
poor Bills.
Bills and the Cowboys, all that kind of garbage.
I think if Indiana jumps them early, I think that's on the table. But I also, Miami's been I think a lot of folks expected A&M to beat Miami.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think Miami's been counted out throughout this college football playoff.
Yep,
and
that's
they
true.
I think everybody thought Ohio State was beating them. Right.
Well, I'm counting them out tonight.
Sure.
No, me
and,
too,
and,
but
and, I, and there's and there's reason to. But if this thing's close late, I wouldn't be that surprised, and it will be tense for, as crazy as it sounds, it will be tense for the favorite, and the favorite in this Indiana Miami game is Indiana.
Well, like, even though it's been an unbelievable season and they've done this, that you've still had people doubting Indiana all along, but all of a sudden I don't see or hear or read many people who don't expect Indiana to play well. So the pressure, I think there's even more pressure on them than they've had.
Probably, but they've handled it
but
so well.
They do handle it so well.
And, but the only thing I would say for Miami is those two defensive ends, they can change a game, right, with their ability to pressure a quarterback. Mendoza is not the most mobile quarterback in the world, so he is kind of a sitting target if they can get to him. But I would imagine Indiana spent the past 10 days where it's been – coming up with a plan for those two guys. So we'll see.
Indiana has a great, and I mean great, offensive line.
Yeah, very good left tackle, too. I think it's going to be a draft pick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, take care, guys.
Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in. Your thoughts on the championship game tonight. Anything in the world of sports as we continue with the Monday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews here in the studio. And, we'd love to talk with you. Anything that you have on your mind, like I said, I tried to keep up with things. I did not realize the Baseball Hall of Fame selections will be announced tomorrow. Speaking of baseball, though, Brian was out at after Auburn's practice today.
Yes.
How are you mentioned it a little while ago. I mean, this is a team that a lot of folks are excited about. I've already seen a couple of preseason top 10 projections for Auburn.
Yeah, and up to I think Baseball America had Auburn at 5 in their preseason poll, which just came out recently. So, some high expectations. The lineup looks good with a lot of competition for the last few spots there. And then I think they're still trying to figure it out in the pitching rotation and stuff, but they've got a whole bunch of arms. So you figure that some guys are going to step up as we move toward the start of the season, as the season gets going too. But I was out there Friday for the first scrimmage, and they're starting a week early. They've allowed now full practices instead of having to do the, the small squad stuff that they had to do before. So, it is early. They kicked the ball around a little bit. I thought Friday was out there this afternoon, and they looked, much, much smoother defensively. The pitchers did a better job, especially the first couple of guys, of throwing strikes, which I think Butch was excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Was not necessarily the case of Friday and Sunday with the first couple of scrimmages. And, still a long way to go. Still very, very early.
Great to be able to get out there and get this done. And thank goodness it wasn't quite as bad today.
Yes,
weather-wise.
Weather's going to be rough next week, but they did name their four legacy captains voted on by the players at the end of fall: Lucas Steele, Chris Rembert, Eric Guevara, and Alex Petrovich. So that's your four.
Yeah. All right. I'm sure Brian will have, if you don't already have something posted, Brian will have some more there
Yeah, well, I'm going to do a notebook baseball for tomorrow, along with a preview of tomorrow night's basketball game at Ole Miss.
So looking forward to that as well. We got another hour to go. Hey, Brian's Monday Musings.
Yes.
Will also come up in hour number two, which is coming up.
Remember when...
Be a part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Monday, where it's I guess is it warmer? It's warmer than it's been.
Maybe
right?
It's all cold.
I don't know.
To me.
I mean, I've been gone. I've been in the 70s and 80s.
Oh man, keep bragging over there.
Well, yeah. No. So you know, I would check and I'd see. Oh, it's 33. It's like I seemed like I checked one time during the middle of the day and it was like in the 30s here. So yeah, I mean it's warming up a little bit, but look out by the end of the week.
Yeah, looks maybe like more wintry precipitation.
There could be winter storms headed this way this weekend. All right, we've got a lot to talk about with you here on the Monday edition of The Drive. There's the national championship game for college football tonight, Indiana and Miami down in Miami. It's a homecoming of all types. With Miami getting to play at home, even though I believe they'll be occupying the visitors' locker room, be on the other side of the field.
Is that right?
Yeah. Fernando Mendoza coming back to his hometown.
That's right. Just down the street he grew up, I guess.
Yeah, how about that? For the Heisman Trophy winner there of the Indiana Hoosiers. So that's going on. The transfer portal closed on Friday.
Yes.
Auburn got a player back from the portal in Jacoby Matthews.
Yes, yes, I did.
And since we headed south and hopped a boat, Auburn added over a dozen players.
Bunch of linemen too, yeah, which was important.
A lot of on both sides of the line of scrimmage.
Yep. And let's remind everybody that the transfer portal did close on Friday. But that's only for players going in, right? You can still sign them out of the portal.
Yeah, and you could still have players that are playing, competing tonight.
Yes.
Who can enter the portal starting tomorrow.
Yes. So Miami and Indiana players.
To do that.
Yep. So still a lot going on. I don't think Auburn's quite done with their portal work. I think they'd still like to add a wide receiver. Yep. I think they'd still look for help on the defensive line.
I imagine, guys on the line of scrimmage on either side, if they feel like they could help them, they'll take them.
And they might look for another cornerback. We'll see. So I still think there's some potential movement out there for this team.
Mm-hmm. When you look at it, Brian, I mean, and I feel like, there was a lot of concern when Auburn had 30-something players go into the portal, but then you add 33 back.
Yeah, it's a wash.
I mean, I feel like they've done a pretty good job of rebuilding – depth. They have numbers now. Well, of course, we'll find out, how well these guys play when they all get together and get out there. Is there any indication? I mean, are all these guys expected to be here now and be able to go through spring?
I have not heard differently on anybody. So as far as I know,
I have not. Obviously, it's been really tough to keep
up. There is so much happening. It's hard to know everything about every detail about everyone. But as far as I know, yes. I don't know any that have to wait till spring, but I just may not have that information at this time. But looking at it, I think Auburn is definitely better at quarterback, no question to me.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely better at running back, no question. They added two really good ones, and they get Jeremiah Cobb back. I just think that's incredible. They're definitely better at tight end. That was the place they struggled last year.
You're absolutely right.
I think they added three portal tight ends, another talented freshman they added late in the class. So that room should be better. And I think they're better. You can make the argument, well, they're definitely better at safety nickel because they're already good there.
They already had all those players coming back. I think when you look at what you lost in the portal and then what you got back, I think they're better at edge.
Maybe. There going to be a key run?
Well, that's true.
Right? Is there a guy that's going to get,
But, I mean, he was gone.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I mean,
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that and Jared Smith or J.J. Falk or one of the guys coming in may be that guy. Right. We'll see. We don't know. And then cornerback, you lose two starters, but you've gotten
– You've signed five or more corners.
A couple of guys who are starters and a couple other really talented guys. I just think they did a really good job there. The only areas I'm still a little concerned with is the line of scrimmage, kind of, but – offensive line, you had three guys returning, three second-year players, and now you have 15 scholarship players.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive, amazing, right? Yeah. And seven portal signees, six of which are going to be seniors, I believe. So you're bringing a lot of experience to that side of the ball. And defensively, they've got some really good players. Did we mention Buddy Mathis?
Yeah, we did earlier.
LSU. Mm-hmm. Kid.
Ole Miss and LSU.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to be a good player, I think, for Auburn in the future. And I think
Deshaun Womack is a
– Yeah, another good one from Ole Miss. Yep. Mm-hmm. Can play the five tech or the edge there.
With the pass rush, and it is fair to wonder, like, if you're talking about, like, strengths and weaknesses of this team on paper as the dust is starting to settle, wondering where the pass rush is going to come from as Auburn replaces Keldrick Falk. And yep. Keyron Crawford is totally fair. I love the core of linebackers and think they could provide some of that as far as getting after the quarterback. Riddick is a guy who you felt like, you know, could maybe transition to a pass rush specialist type of role and just be a terror. But it feels like there's a lot of pressure on Womack and Jared Smith to step into the Keldrick Falk and Keyron Crawford roles. And that's a big jump for both of those guys. I think especially for Jared. But you get the sense that some folks around the program think he could do it, and that's a guy where it's a little bit like a Morris, where he didn't contribute a ton in year one, but there's the belief that he's ready to make that jump and be a reliable starter in year two.
Oh, I agree. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was looking at something.
Jared Smith to me, like Smith and Womack feel like guys that there's going to be. Yes. It's going to be a lot of attention paid to what kind of progress they make between now and the start of the season.
Yeah, and J.J. Falk, too. I just not to limit him. And then their top signee, the kid from just up the road, is coming in.
Jaquez
Wilkes. Watch out for him. He's going to be a player, mm-hmm. I feel like, my opinion, for Auburn sometime in the near future.
Yeah, so this spring is going to be interesting. Nice to see that it's going to be they're going to have actually a spring game where – Yes. We should be able to, know who's leading, because
points
will be traditional.
They
points.
Were kind of pushing them out because of the spring portal that came after spring games. They didn't want people scouting their
games.
Well,
there's no reason to showcase guys for other teams' eyes.
Now you don't have the spring portal, although, again, if somebody wants to challenge that in court, or somebody still wants to lead, they probably can't be stopped. But it's not the same as having an actual portal where it's just kind of, all these kids go in at one time and everybody's scrambling. It's not the same thing.
Well, it's the next few months is going to be really interesting. There are going to be some things to be watching in court that's going on in the courtrooms with some of the players around the country that have decided, I can do – we've been able to do what we want. I'll be able to do whatever I want, and it doesn't matter if I've had an agreement or signed something with somebody else because you've got.
It's still the Wild West.
I did see a couple of the things, and again, am I right in that Ole Miss is at least talking legal action against a player that they feel they have a solid signed deal with while they signed a player who had the same thing with Clemson.
Yeah.
I believe that's going on.
They're suing to get Trinidad Chambliss eligible for another year, right?
Year. So, yeah. But they're also threatening legal action to prevent a player from leaving while they signed a player who has signed an agreement. I mean, something's going to have to happen. There's going to happen.
The only thing the only thing that can happen to really set this thing where we're not having all this, Wild West stuff, all this unknown out there, is for the players and the conferences, NCAA, all get together and hammer out a negotiated agreement. And that's when we can start having set rules as far as eligibility, as far as transfer, as far as salary cap.
Really, really interesting to watch.
The whole thing is, it feels, until there are, you know, a concrete structure and something, it feels like there's still this grasping of, you want to be able to tell a player no when he says he goes in the portal. Or you want to be able to tell a player, well, you signed a deal or something like that. It feels like all that
is... Ole Miss don't want a player no.
Exactly. But it seems like more and more like
that
when the...
doesn't mean he's paying any attention to it or when planning on leaving.
Like when the portal's open and a player wants to go in the portal, doesn't matter if he's signed a deal already with you. It doesn't matter. Like all this stuff seems to be...
You wonder, should it matter? I mean, yes. I mean, what is the purpose of signing a deal then?
It almost feels like you could... Like, it's all handshakes until the portal closes.
I mean...
And that's a crazy way to...
It feels like they have an ironclad... They have the exclusive rights. They have Darian Mintz's signature saying that Duke has his exclusive NIL rights.
Yeah.
And Miami's going, that's all right. We're going to pay him more.
Yeah. Miami says you can have them. We'll have his services as a quarterback, and we'll find a way to compensate him, you know, however else it works. And you're right. That's not an optimum system building a roster.
No,
having
system
any,
at all. I mean, what is this? They're going to just go ahead and change the name of the group to the NIL Go to NIL Gone? I mean, it's like, you know, what good are they?
Now, when the portal's closed, one would think that, like, that movement stops. But until then, like, we've seen multiple instances where when the portal's open, a player wants to go in the portal and a team tries to tell him, well, no, you can't, or here's why you have to stay.
We've already seen here in the last few days, and again, this is from afar. Me just checking a headline here or there, players who have gone in the portal and announced they're going somewhere and committed to a school and then changed their mind and they're going somewhere else. It's like, so there is no – it's like, why wouldn't every player just enter the portal? Because your options would just be endless then.
Well, but on the other hand, there are thousands of players still in the portal
there
now
are.
That are in a tough situation. Kids that have left Auburn don't have offers or not getting – and if they try to come back to Auburn, another school, things have changed over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That same offer you had.
Yeah, they've gone out and brought in, like I said, you know, brought in, you know, double-digit players over the last week. And that spot, it's
exactly.
Not the same.
So, you know, you got to be smart if you're going to jump in that portal. You better
know.
Yeah.
You better know.
And
that
a lot of kids already know, and that's just the way it is.
But
right
I'm
now.
Saying any of the ones that have already been like, oh, you know, we've got you here.
Yeah.
You know, why not? I mean, I can see where players that go in the portal and go, yeah, sure, I'm going there. And but if I get a better offer, then I'll leave and go somewhere else.
I think there are kids like that. But I think those kids are just like us, too. You know, some of them don't want to jump to a different place every 4 years. There are some that do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of them want to find a place where they fit in, where they can play, have success, and all those things, and stick around as long as they're getting paid a similar amount of money. But, you know, until they sit down and iron out things, collectively bargain, we're going to have the Wild West. We're going to have CSC or NCAA trying to make rules and those rules being challenged in court. And when it comes to player movement, paying players, it's really going to be hard for the NCAA or the CSC to win those battles. They may win some battles on eligibility, but that's probably about it.
All right, so I may have missed this. Did Tennessee come up with a quarterback? Levitt went to LSU, right?
Levitt went to LSU, yes.
So what is Tennessee got?
I did not see if Tennessee found a quarterback in the portal. They may have done so. I mean, you would think that hype. Oh, they got a Colorado. From Staub, so they have one, and I believe there's also still legal uncertainty about Aguilar's eligibility. He's also fighting in court to maybe be eligible for another season.
That's where the NCAA again and the schools need to just go ahead and say, look, forget this nine game. And what is this with this nine game red shirt idea?
That's just,
what is the point of that?
The point of it is
no point.
Them just trying to change the rule, but they don't want to just do it and make it 5 years because they're worried about people suing them. that want to come back and get the fifth year.
Look, it's
college. It's more dumb stuff.
The schools ought to just agree and go ahead and go. It's 5 to 25.
Yeah, it should be, but they're scared to do anything.
But I mean, you can still redshirt. Well, have you played 8 games? Oh, well, then we don't really know yet.
Yes, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, to go from 4 to 9 is insane. All right, we're about a quarter of the way through here with hour number 2. So we'll get to our first break. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We've got Brian's Monday Musings before we are done, but plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio, and let's get to the Drive Hotline. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
How was Little Feet?
Outstanding. Really, really, really good. I didn't think my video did it did justice. The audio
was
really good.
No, it was fine. You know, that singer, and I don't know his last name, Scott, was with Greg Allman the last couple of years of Greg's life.
Yeah,
he was
really
good.
Yeah, he talked about that a little bit. That was one of the cool things is when you got an opportunity to be around the guy, be around the bands and the players. I mean, they're just there sort of mingling and watching. And
did you say Randall was there too?
Yes.
You know, I saw him at one of those Sundilla shows when it was just him, and he kind of did that thing where he would talk about the songs, even like the Sea Level songs, but playing the way they started, mm-hmm. you know, much different than the way they ended up being, but that was really cool.
Yeah,
it's good. First off, I want to commend Coach Dunn. Did an outstanding job last week. I mean, he sounded like a seasoned pro on the radio.
That's what he is. He's a seasoning pro, right? Because he's been working.
That's
a good one, Dan. Nice.
But no, I can't say enough about a coach and his willingness to
embrace
that.
And I like the way he answered the phones that when people call. He says, "You're on the Skybar Hotline." So I thought that was pretty cool.
I love it.
But yeah, anyway, I don't really have much, but I was pretty mad yesterday at some friends of mine who were saying how they were glad that Bo, now these aren't great friends,
what?
But glad that Bo got hurt, and they talk
and
about
Terry didn't even say that.
The interception that shouldn't have, you know, and all that crap, and then they talked about how he left Auburn.
After
first
he graduated.
Off, he got a degree in 3 years,
yeah,
which
really.
A lot of people calling, you know, or talking never did, but he also still loves Auburn. I mean, mm-hmm. He grew up loving Auburn. He still loves Auburn. His family still loves Auburn. So,
I don't understand.
I don't understand that at all, John. But you're right. I mean, there seem to be, you know, a lot of folks that just still hold that against him.
Yeah,
he turned his back on Auburn or something. That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
But the situation he had here with the coaching that was here, it's like. He really, really needed
yes, he did.
To leave and get a fresh start.
And it was the right decision
absolutely.
In so many ways.
Yeah, well, even in my cynical, cynical world, like the thought of, like, I found Bo Nix to be extremely easy to root for. I thought that dude just brought it every single week, and sometimes it didn't go great. He was rarely the problem.
Yeah.
I think as evidenced by seeing how things have turned out for him and how things have turned out for
the
aftermath.
I was listening to the next round this morning, and that he was one of their first NIL call-in guys. And they said even when he got benched for TJ, he came in the next week and he said 5 minutes early, prepared, had good lighting, was ready to go, dressed right. And you know, he said he was just straightforward the whole time, so. And, Bill, I don't know if you this might happen after you left. Probably happened before. Did you see Patrick Nix retired from Central?
Yeah, I did. So he's moving out to Colorado. I think that happened on Friday when we were about to leave. Moving out there. He's going to start a ministry out there and going to be near his near his daughter as well as Bo.
And someone, there were rumors floating around about different candidates for the Central Phoenix City job, and I think Coach Dunn might have gotten hoaxed by one of those. But it's the coach who was at Jackson High has taken the Central job. Cody Flournoy is his job and is his name.
I didn't see that.
And he was a multiple time state champion at, I think it's 4A. Is Jackson? I could have that wrong, but he's right. They have replaced Coach Nix there at Central.
Isn't that where Clint Mosley played way back? Backup quarterback.
I'm not sure if he was. He was from
South Alabama.
It was one of those schools north of Mobile.
Yeah,
I don't remember if it was Jackson or not, but I thought.
I don't think it was Jackson.
No, he wasn't Leroy, was he?
Glad to have
I think
Clint was from Leroy.
I was going to guess Gordo, but I was like, I think
Gordo's
wrong.
Gordo's wrong, near Tuscaloosa.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, War Eagle guys, and thanks for taking my call.
Good hearing from you, John. Thanks, man. 334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline.
Good pull with Leroy.
Yeah, I was just trying to. I mean, that's down in you know, the part of the state where I grew up. And some of the schools that we played over there. I mean, it was like being from a small town that was the only, at the time it was 2A, I think they're 3A now, but you had to drive over around Mobile to take on Millry and Leroy those schools.
Deshaun Davis was from Vigor,
yeah.
Right? Okay. That's another
looks
one
like Vigor. Yeah,
yeah,
it's Vigor.
Smaller schools down there, yeah.
All right. We've got a few minutes left here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Want to go ahead and tell us about your Monday musings today, Brian?
Oh, are we ready to do that?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, we've got a few minutes here. I mean, that way, if we get calls in a little while, we've got the bottom of the hour coming
up here in a
few minutes. But,
Well, I wrote about what a great job I think that Alex Golish and Andrew Warsaw, the GN, have done in this transfer portal. As I mentioned, I think they've strengthened some key positions. They've held their own at others, and they're still rebuilding the defensive line, which is the one area they probably still need to work on and maybe find another receiver. But overall, I think they've done a remarkable job. I think this team on paper is better than it was a year ago, and I like, you know, the potential of this offense with the quarterback, with the center, with receivers that already know this offense, a running back, of hitting the ground running right away.
And you got to feel DJ Durkin's going to have the defense ready to go.
Yeah, you would. And then y'all are going to get this quite easily, but musical journey. We go back 43 years, so it's 1983, to a song about three cousins growing up together on Sand Mountain, rising to the top of the charts.
Oh, we're talking mountain music.
Yep, mountain music, Alabama. Yeah, that was too easy. But yes, I wrote about Alabama.
Sand Mountain. Yep. If it's gonna,
Yep. Mountain music, a great song, a crossover song. I don't know if you can hear it on 70s and 80s type music.
I don't
but
usually. You hear
maybe
it on
country
on classic
still.
Country.
Yeah. Eagle. Country. I mean, yeah, Tiger Country. You know, yeah.
But I mean, that's the genre that you generally hear that.
Definitely. But
Randy Owen, yeah.
But just a great
one of the guys.
Great band. So many. I think they had 40-something number one country singles.
Yeah.
Were country music, what was it, Act of the Year, whatever the award was for five straight years, which is a record. So just incredible. ACM's Entertainer of the Year for five straight times. So just incredible. And from right here in Fort Payne, just up the road, so to speak.
One of them looks exactly like Danny McBride. I forget which one. If you pulled up a picture like with labeled Bill, you know, you'd view it. But one of the members of Alabama looks exactly like, especially like Kenny Powers era.
Yeah,
Danny McBride. Like one of the guys in Alabama is a dead ringer for Danny McBride. But no, that's Mountain Music's that's catchy. That's a catchy tune.
Yep.
There, Brian.
Very much so. So that was a lot of fun to write about them. I'd written about them about 5-6 years ago, but it was good to, you know, kind of reset it and do some different stuff that I didn't write about the first time.
Yeah, that's cool. I just, after talking with John, I thought it'd be good to go ahead and get into the the musings. And I'll tell you, the guy that was on the ship that may not be a name that a lot of folks may not be familiar with is a guy that. He was sitting in with just seemed like just about every band. A guy by the name of Will McFarland, who played with Delbert McClinton for a long time, played with Bonnie Raitt. I mean, he is, and he lives up in Muscle Shoals, which is, I mean, you talk about music in the state of Alabama. Yes. But I mean, he was, you know, playing with everybody, just an unbelievable, you know, guitar and slide, I mean, just regular great folks though. I mean, just a guy that would, he'd be like at the next table while you're sitting down in the dining area or something and just shoot the breeze and, you know, just,
it's great
as just down to earth, a guy and a, he's in the Musicians Hall of Fame.
I've written about the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio. It's just incredible history there. And it's still, a form of it is still going on. So, of course, you know, but yeah, just unbelievable. Yeah. The music and that's been recorded there, the artists that have been there.
No kidding.
It's just incredible.
You know, getting back to John's call a little bit. Yeah, absolutely no ill will towards Bo, to me.
It's hard to believe that people would just have that. What do they think would happen? What do they think if Bo had stayed? Do they think things would have been a whole lot different?
No, I think choices that were made along the way, and he stuck it out for 3 years, right? In this era of college athletics, I mean, I can't ask a guy to give you a lot more than that. And he went and he thrived at Oregon and went first round in the NFL and was the quarterback of the one seed in the AFC playoffs and would be starting in the AFC Championship this Sunday with a chance to go to the Super Bowl if he hadn't gotten hurt on that play in overtime.
And again.
So have you seen any of this?
No.
So he scrambles in overtime. There's a quarterback run where he gets up hobbling, he gets up gingerly, seems like he's trying to run it off, walk it off, stays in the game, and throws a pass that ends with pass interference. Throws a deep ball that ends in a pass interference call. They get closer and they get to kick the field goal. This all happened in overtime at the end of the game with the Bills. And then after the game is over, Sean Payton announced it at the press conference on Saturday night. It was the first of the four games.
Yeah.
So it's like right.
Yeah, I know. It's where I have no way of seeing any of this.
So I'm watching Bills Bears or I'm watching Bills Broncos at the airport after the Troy game. So we're at the DFW. Getting ready to get on our plane, and the game ends right as we are taxiing. Like, so we're watching it with strangers on the plane, and then when we land, I guess we all find out the news about Bo Nix, and it's shocking and terrible. And you know, as I said before, like Bo Nix is he's face down. Less than ideal circumstances, and he comes back stronger. I think he'll be fine. It's terrible that he has to miss out on, you know, what could be a championship season so early in his career. But yeah, I expect him to come back stronger than ever. What a gigantic opportunity for Jarrett Stidham.
Oh, you're not kidding.
I mean, a guy that played his heart out for 2 years at Auburn. Won 10 games. The last time Auburn had a 10-win season, it was Jarrett Stidham.
Yep.
His first time, you know, his first year as Auburn starter. And he could find himself as the center of attention in the sports world over the next couple of weeks.
Going against a really tough defense.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding.
New England, but man.
But he's at home, and he hasn't. How about this? The Broncos were the only team in the NFL this season where one quarterback threw every pass attempt. It was Bo Nix. And I believe it was also true. I believe it was also true of the Broncos last season. It's two straight years.
That's where wild.
So I mean, it's been a while since Jarrett Stidham has attempted a pass.
Yeah.
He took over for Russell Wilson his first year on the team, but he's backed up Bo ever since. But his teammates know him. And I think we've seen more Jarrett Stidham than most people.
Yeah,
he can play.
Great dude.
He's a great dude, and I would, I mean, hope he's ready for what could be a gigantic moment.
I can't wait to watch.
I don't know. He's a guy who can play.
Yeah, that is.
What do you think, huh?
It's a
I'm excited to watch that game. It's going to be a great game. Yeah.
Rooting for him. Hopefully Auburn folks, I think, rally and root for him too, because it'd be really cool to see.
Oh, you can root for Carlton Davis and the Patriots.
You can root for Carlton Davis, who had a huge game.
Yes, he did.
For the Patriots. You're right.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still got about 20 minutes. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
1-1-3-9-0. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday. I can go ahead and say evening now. It's good. I mean, you know, it's taking a little later every day. The day is a little bit longer.
Under an hour from the championship game?
That is right. Well, I'd say probably over an hour to kickoff.
Okay. We're getting there.
Yeah. You know, the pregames, we got to have plenty of pregame action tonight. And a lot to talk about. I mean, there are all kinds of stories for tonight's matchup of Indiana and Miami.
We talked a little basketball.
Yeah, we didn't talk that much. I wanted to get back and talk a little bit more again. Sure. You know, Auburn goes 2-1 while I'm gone.
But
that's good.
And that's a nice win against South Carolina. I feel like you did not want to.
But, you know, I wasn't here. Yeah. I didn't get to see now. Floyd and Teresa did. They flew down on Sunday morning, so they got to see the Arkansas game. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
You were feeling pretty good about that the last time we talked.
I thought Auburn was that was another one where they had
just
they
did
had
not to, see, did not see that coming.
They had to conjure it up, and I also thought Arkansas a week where they've been on the road all week long. And they were, I think they were ripe for a letdown. I just thought Auburn was in position to match them as a team that doesn't. And Arkansas is not a team that wants to play a ton of really disciplined half court offense.
No, that's true.
And that's something I think you need, like a point guard with a bunch of teammates he's familiar with. Purdue, those are the kind of teams that can pick Auburn apart at this moment. But I think teams that want to run and play loose sort of play into Auburn's hands. And Arkansas, they got. You know, they just ran into a buzzsaw immediately. Auburn was up for the task.
Yeah,
that
obviously.
Day. And then Missouri was a rough night. It was just things sort of snowballed for Auburn against Missouri. You know, it started with a tough games for Todd and Keyshawn Hall, and Missouri being able to just sort of outwork Auburn for good looks around the basket, and their 3-point shots started to go in. And you know, whenever Auburn, sort of like the inverse of South Carolina, whenever Auburn started to make a run in the second half against Missouri, Missouri had an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then against South Carolina, whenever South Carolina started to do anything in the second half, Auburn had the answer and was able to fire back. And having an answer is something Auburn's going to need tomorrow night against Ole Miss and this weekend against Florida. Like, you want to be able to fire back, because those runs are going to happen for the other team, and you just want to be able to have some response when it's time to provide yours.
Yeah, and before you got here, Brian, we were talking about it a little bit, some of the comments Stephen Pearl had today.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a little different kind of a challenge. You know, Ole Miss has got a big point guard.
They do.
And that can be a problem for Tahad.
Yep.
I'm
sure they will try to work on some things there, yeah.
Yeah. But Tahad, Stephen, really complimentary of Tahad's play, despite the fact that he continued to struggle shooting the ball,
yes.
But he cut down on the mistakes defensively,
yes.
and got the ball where it needed to be. And Auburn just couldn't buy shots this past
Saturday. Right, they shot, I think it was 2 of 19, if I'm not mistaken, from three.
Yeah, they hit like their first and their last and missed 17 in between.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this team identity last week or the week before, and it is being scrappy and playing great defense. The problem with that is they don't do it enough, or they haven't done it consistently yet. So we'll see if they can build off this game against South Carolina, where they really went after and got after it on both ends of the floor and really played scrappy. And, I thought Philip Jovic was terrific on both ends of the floor. And he's just – when he gets the ball inside, he has such great touch and such body control, and
you
can find different
you
ways.
You can see the confidence.
Yeah,
he's getting more.
Every
and more
time
and more
he steps on the floor, it gets better.
If Jovic responds to that game on Saturday, if he can string together a couple of really good looking games, that'll feel like a breakthrough. That'll feel like something that started with that game against South Carolina. Also, big shout out to Larry Vickers. and the
how about
and
that?
The women
beating the tide,
beating Alabama in the Iron Bowl of basketball. When Alabama's in the top 25, they play hard. They play hard, and as they get better, you know, over the next few years, I'm really excited to see what happens there. Let's get to Pat, who's been hanging on.
Hey, Pat.
Hey guys, I'm glad you had fun, Bill. Sound like something to be fun to do. I've never done
no
that.
No question, man. I would encourage anybody. I mean, if you love music and food.
The answer's yes and yes.
That's like how can you go wrong, man? It's great.
Yeah, I like both those for sure. Now I wanted to make a. I was thinking about the game tonight, and you know, it's just one of those games where it's like that line. I was thinking there's going to be 10, just because I mean, who besides a Miami fan would pick Miami? I mean, I don't think that
What's the argument for this game to be close, right? That's sort of what you're wondering.
Yeah, that's what y'all are saying. I mean, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking this is a game where it's probably going to end up being close, and the bookies are going to clean up, because I don't know. I wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole, because it's just that one game that everybody says, oh, this is going to be the one, and then it ends up being close. But the way the season's gone, it won't be close. But, you know, that will be the perfect season for them, I think, just for to win it on out. But anyway, I wanted to say one thing. Would you say that when Brian Harsin, when Bo Nix left, would you say that Brian Harsin ran him off?
In a way, kind of. I mean, not
in a way.
You need to go.
Yeah.
You
don't have a. He didn't.
Right.
He definitely
no, but the
didn't
fact
go
that,
out of his
yeah,
way
the,
to keep him.
The fact the way things were going with Brian Harsin here definitely was.
I think
was not a small factor.
I would say a lot of the choices Brian Harsin made contributed to Bo Nix deciding to leave.
Yeah, that's a good way to write.
Like I would think of it that way. Like Bo might have left anyway. You know, if the talent around him wasn't going to give him a sufficient chance to win the way he thought he could win. Right, like I mean, he was almost. I don't think he actually made the. I forget if he actually made the playoff at Oregon, but they got really close a couple of years in a row during his tenure with the Ducks. But no, I think that's.
But Bo wanted to stay. Bo wanted to stay, though, right?
I mean, he was very excited to come to Auburn, right? I mean, and played two and a half years.
I think
as
his
starter.
Plan was, yeah, he was. You know, his plan when he came out of high school was he was going to be here and stay here. Yeah,
would have liked to stay. Yeah.
We can agree that he if he wanted to keep Bo, he would have had a great chance to keep him, put it that way. So he also ran off Mendoza from California when he got there. So Harsin is basically, I mean as soon as he Mendoza went to Indiana, I don't think that was in his mind an upgrade at the time.
Well,
you know, so
they were in the playoff last year.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, Indiana was. Much better.
I do think it's worth pointing out in both of these cases, the quarterback probably went to a team that was much better than the team he left. Like I think both, but that doesn't absolve Brian Harsin of any of the blame because you're right. He was at the scene of the crime in both situations.
Yeah, both quarterbacks left him. That's not something I'd be bragging about for sure. I mean,
yeah, I would think some other recruiters might use that.
No, but Pat, hey, you know what? You were, and I remember you as one of the callers who, after that game against Cal, Auburn Cal 2024, it's like Auburn needs
Can
a
we get that guy?
Auburn needs a quarterback like that guy because that guy's throwing darts on time and on the money every single time Cal needed it that day.
Yep, exactly. Well, it just it would drive me insane if I was him. Just think that I could have been coaching both of those two quarterbacks, and now I can't say it. You know what I'm saying? He could have been like the king technically. If he was able to do it. But anyway, all right, guys, we all have a great one in War Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Pat. 334-321-1390.
Mitch.
Hey, Mitch.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, guys. Take Miami plus 4.5 in the first half, but they're probably going to end up losing. Want to give a shout-out to B-Matt and the coach. I was listening the Wednesday. They were on the air, and I thought I was listening to the Feinbaum show. There were so many calls.
Well, I know.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Thank you, people, saving us.
So kudos on you, B-Matt. But basketball question. Was watching the Florida basketball game this weekend, and in the second half around the 18:53 mark, Florida got 4 free throws.
How does that happen?
A couple ways that can happen.
Okay.
You can get a foul, and then they could call a technical afterward. Like if you were fouled and you get two free throws, and then after that foul is over, somebody on the other team commits a technical foul, and they have to assess two more free throws in the ball. So then you're shooting four free throws in the ball. I mean, it's rare unless something extra has been assessed.
Did the same player shoot all four free throws?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was Florida's big man, and he was like a 50-something percent free throw shooter, and who were they playing? Vanderbilt?
Yeah. Yeah, they beat Vandy by four.
Yeah, well, he hit all – I mean, they were down by like, I don't know, five or six, something like that. But he hit all four free throws, which the commentator was like, wow. And then, you know, they got the ball and they hit a three and they went up – I mean, they were down by like seven – or no, they were down by like five, and then they went up by two, I guess, after the four free throws and the – so it was like a seven-point possession pretty much. Is what happened, and I was just curious because I rewound it and everything. It's like, yeah, he gets four free throws. It's like, how do you get four free throws?
Well, what would need to happen is, you know, there would need to be something extra assessed on top of a shooting foul. You know what I mean? Like that's what would need to happen for Chinyelu to get like four for you to get four shots. I guess the other thing that could happen though is think about it like this: if a player hits two free throws and the other team is inbounding the ball and commits a foul while inbounding the ball, Bill, like an offensive foul or something on the resulting inbounds, the other team could get, would that be, well, no, it would need to be, no, it would need to be a loose ball. It would need to be something extra.
Well, Dan, like I said, I rewound it and listened, and I didn't really hear an explanation, but he was there on the line and shot four straight free throws. So
yeah, it would need to be a flagrant, I think.
Yeah,
I would think you'd have to
have something. You'd have to have something in addition to, a normal call to continue that.
Okay. All right. Well, it was just weird for me to see that. So
I thought you got it,
especially you, Dan, since you call basketball. But I didn't know that the NFL overtime in the playoffs was 15 minutes, because during the regular season it's normally 10 minutes, isn't it?
I don't think so.
Well, they do one extra. I thought they did a 15-minute period in the NFL overtime,
But now you get two possessions. You're guaranteed a possession apiece before it becomes sudden death.
And if the regular season, if the overtime period expires, the game ends in a tie, and they keep they keep playing like it's a regular game, going into a second overtime in the playoffs.
Right. And the last thing about Stidham, and I'll be pulling for the Broncos. That's actually my brother's team. He's been pulling for them for 40 plus years. But I think they said that Stidham hadn't had a snap in like 700 plus days.
Wow. Now, he did have a big game in one of the preseason games. I don't remember which one it was, but I think he threw for like 300 and something yards or something like that.
Yes,
I saw
Stidham has not. I don't believe Stidham has attempted a pass in a regular season game since Bo Nix joined the team 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
And it was, by the way, Mitch. It was a flagrant foul. It was if you commit a foul that's going to result in two free throws, and they upgrade it to a flagrant foul, there's an extra two free throws and the ball in that situation.
Oh wow. Okay. Did not know that. Okay.
And then Florida hit a 3-pointer on the inbounds afterwards. So that's how you score 7 points on one trip down the floor.
Right. And last thing, and I know it probably wouldn't, you probably couldn't do it at Jordan Hare Stadium, but did you guys see the little lounge that was there in the tunnel when after New England won and the players were going down, and there's like a lounge right there for the tunnel that goes to the locker room for the Patriots?
You're talking about like inside the tunnel?
Yeah.
Yeah, NFL teams have some pretty swanky, because that's also like some people with field access need access to those sorts of things. So there are some pretty nice field level combinations. I know the Falcons are proud of what they've got sort of underneath the concourse at field level in their stadium.
Well, I just thought that was kind of cool because, I mean, you know, the quarterback for New England was, you know, going back to the locker room. And there was all these fans, you know, hanging their hands out from the lounge there with TVs and a bar and everything, you know, give him, you know, high fives and all that stuff. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. So anyway, that's all I got, guys.
Hi, man. Right. Good hearing from you, Mitch.
Here is Jarrett Stidham's numbers in two preseason games, so take that for what it's worth. This was earlier this fall. 30 of 38, 376 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
They take that.
Definitely take that.
Got to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Monday Drive.
At Affordable Comfort Cooling Systems and Plumbing, we believe our...
The session, guys. We are out of time here on the Monday Drive, Brian.
You said the session guys into the mic.
We're talking about other stuff here too. B-Matt, again, we really appreciate you filling in last week. It's always great to have you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that all you guys are doing there.
Yeah, we'll continue to roll out any news from the portal, baseball out there today, basketball, of course, have full coverage of that. Have a story tomorrow, previewing the game, all that and more. AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter, @BMattAU.
Again, thanks to Brian and Jason and Justin and Jacob, who did a great job filling in for us last week. What's your schedule?
And the coach. Yeah. I'm here most of the week. I'm gone Thursday.
We're back tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. Right. We're out of here.